Blog Talk Radio.
Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. The sun is out, but it's really muggy out. I'm here in New York City, and it's my time. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, just so everybody knows. On the show, it's the centennial birthday of Francis Albert Sinatra. Well, not that we're going to have Frank Sinatra on the air. However, world-renowned singer Julie Budd is celebrating America's greatest and most iconic music entertainer of all time with a new CD. And we are going to talk with her right after a message. Yeah, you know, somebody's got to support it. Our sponsor, hang on there.
Hey, Martha. Why do you smile? I was just thinking, I'm here at Ronnie Brook Farms eating delicious grass, not being injected with some synthetic hormones. I just gave birth to another cutie calf and don't even have to deal with any bull. I hear you, Mar. You know what they call cows that can't give milk? No, what, Sal? Utter failure. So, where is our big daddy Ronnie? Probably somewhere exercising, doing yogurt. At Ronnie Brook Farms, you'll find the best of dairy products. Our milks vary in butterfat from non-fat to heavy cream. Enjoy the creamy yogurts from the cup or one that you can simply drink with the best of culture without artificial thickeners or additives. We don't have sour cream. We do have creme fraiche. Butter is better when you can choose cinnamon toast to spread on bread or pancakes. And since we scream for ice cream any time of year, you'll love our 16% butterfat. Do you remember getting bottled milk delivered, opening it to find the cream on the top? That is how you'll find our sweet-tasting cream-lined milk. I'll hand it to you, Sal, or milk may get past your eyes. But certainly not homogenized. Ronnie Brook Farms, where cows always seem to be in a good mood. Check us out at www.ronniebrook.com.
All right, before I get a glass of milk... Let's go talking. Let's have our talk here with Julie. Julie, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Meryl?
Oh, okay. How are you doing?
I'm good, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Before we go into your biography, we want to show you are not a relative of Barbara Streisand. Am I correct?
You are correct. She has a sister. She has a sister by the name of Rosalind Kind.
Uh-huh.
Rosalind Kind is her sister.
Okay, because that's one of the things that used to be, you look a little like her. That's what I think where that came about. But, and as far as voice, I mean, you both have great voices, so... Anyway,
well,
so
Brooklyn did well with the water.
Did you grow up in Brooklyn, too?
Yes. Where did you grow up?
Oh, I grew up Bronx and Queens.
Oh, did you go to Taft?
No, I went to Christopher Columbus.
Oh, a very good friend of mine, great singer, Karen Wyman. She went to Taft. She was raised in the Bronx. I was raised in Brooklyn. And when we were kids, you know, we used to get together in the city because it was too far for me to go to the Bronx and it was too far for her to go to Brooklyn. We used to meet on 6th Avenue and 55th Street. That's where we used to meet.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I used to in the Bronx when I went to Manhattan. We always said, "Oh, I'm going downtown." And
that's
Manhattan.
Funny.
Yeah,
that
I'm going downtown.
You were going into the city.
You know? And it's funny because when I moved to Queens, people would say, "I'm going into the city." And I would go, "But aren't we in the city?"
No, the city's the city. You know, my mother and father, God bless them, they lived on Queens Boulevard after they sold our house in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
They lived in the Kennedy House. Do you remember the Kennedy House?
Why does it sound familiar?
Because it's right on 72nd Road.
Oh, yes, okay.
Right near Austin Street, Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Sure, that's where my mom and pop lived.
Summon a gun. Look at that.
See, we've been old neighbors and we don't even know it.
So your parents lived there and then you moved to Brooklyn?
No, we lived in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And then my parents sold their home.
Oh, after they sold their home, they moved to to Queens.
They moved to Forest Hills.
Forest Hills. I'm not far
from
Forest Hills. I'm in Woodhaven, which is just, you know, 10 minutes away. But anyway,
we
get into all of that, so tell us about yourself. Come on, let's hear.
Well, do you know anything about me?
I went online. I remembered your name for years. Yeah, I remembered your name for years.
When we were all kids, you know, I was out there working at 12 years old, you know, and when I was a little girl, I got started in show business very, very young. And actually, you know, my mother and father never really wanted me to be in show business, but it's something I really, really did want to do. And I have to say I had the most remarkable parents. You know, they allowed me to explore. And I wound up meeting Merv Griffin, and he put me on his TV show every single week. Can you imagine that? For years, I was on the Merv Griffin show every single week. You can just imagine what that kind of exposure was like. I used to open the show. I used to close the show. And then I did Ed Sullivan. I did Carol Burnett. And I did the Ed Sullivan show. And I did Mike Douglas. And I did all of those terrific CBS variety shows, you know, because CBS was really the king of the variety show, you know, in those times. And I was just a little girl, you know, but it was the way I grew up. And fortunately for me, many, many of these shows were on the East Coast, like Mike Douglas was in Philadelphia and Merv Griffin was in New York. Even Johnny Carson was over at Rock Plaza, you know, where they do Saturday Night Live. So that's where Johnny Carson was. Then little by little, they all started moving out to the West Coast, and I used to go out to L.A. To do all my TV. But I grew up in New York, and I grew up on TV. So I was a kid that ran on the subways back and forth, but yet I was that kid on television. It was a funny combination of the kid from the neighborhood and the kid on television. But it was actually good to grow up that way because I wasn't one of these sort of showbiz kids. I was pretty grounded with my family and my friends, and I had my life in Brooklyn, and then I had my life on television, which was kind of funny. And then when I was about 18 years old, by that time I had a nice following, people who had known me from television, that I grew up on TV my whole life, and I headlined my first huge major New York engagement at the Copacabana here in New York City. And that was enormous, you know, to be at the Copacabana.
Yeah.
there really wasn't anything bigger than the Copa in New York City. Matter of fact, I think the Copacabana was the most prestigious and well-known live venue for entertainment of that sort, maybe in the country. It was just the biggest, with the biggest reputation. That's where I first headlined on my own. But prior to headlining on my own, when I was about 16 years old, Frank Sinatra had invited me to join him in Las Vegas as his special guest artist at Caesar's Palace.
Well, that's how Frank Sinatra now first comes into the picture.
That's how Mr. Sinatra comes into the picture. When I was 16 years old, you know, he had become familiar with me because of so much of the television that I was doing at the time. And there was a wonderful, wonderful man by the name of Dave Victorson, and he was the head of entertainment at Caesar's Palace. And he had seen me at the International Hotel with Bill Cosby. I was opening for Bill, and I was only 14 at the time. And about a year later, maybe a year and a half later, he invited me through Mr. Sinatra to be his special guest artist at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. And Dave Victorson was wonderful because he was the man who even, you know, brought my name up to Mr. Sinatra. Oh, you know, Frank, you have to listen to this kid, and, you know. And then Mr. Sinatra heard my recordings, and in those days we called them kinescopes. He had seen my kinescopes.
Really?
And that's what we called DVDs, what you might call a DVD today.
Oh, okay.
And he had seen my TV. And then he was aware of me, Mr. Sinatra, from all the TV I was doing, because I was doing an enormous amount of TV at the time because they had all those shows. And Mr. Sinatra said, I'd really like her to be in my show. I'd like to invite her as my special guest artist. So there I was. I found myself in Las Vegas at 16 years old working with Frank Sinatra. And that's kind of what this CD is all about. You know, I realize that a lot of people are doing centennial tributes to Mr. Sinatra right now. But I think there's a profound difference here, and the fact is that I knew Mr. Sinatra. And so the music comes from a very personal, even the selections that we chose, they're from a very, very personal point of view. And another thing that's important to note is I didn't want to try to sound like Mr. Sinatra. You know, all these people make these recordings and they try to emulate Mr. Sinatra's sound. I think I was paying more tribute to Mr. Sinatra himself and the fact that he had asked me to continue to sing these songs and that they're wonderful songs. And they're reminiscent of maybe some of the versions that were done in concert every night. But they're not a copy of anything. They're my recollection of some great songs and the way that I do them. And because they're really a tribute to the music that was done in concert with Mr. Sinatra.
Can you, like, tell us, like, some of the songs that's on the CD?
Sure. World on a String, All the Way, The Best is Yet to Come, More Than You Know, The Nearness of You, The Very Thought of You, Come Rain or Come Shine, Don't Get Around Much Anymore. He recorded a wonderful version of Wee Small Hours of the Morning, as you know, I'm sure. And he also had a very, very famous album of that name, Wee Small Hours of the Morning. Some people think it was one of his best albums of all time, was Wee Small Hours. We recorded that. I recorded How About You, which is a wonderful, wonderful piece. And How About You I have as a special dedication to my parents, because when I was a little girl, my mom used to sing that to me. My mom had an extraordinary instrument. She had a beautiful voice.
Oh. Is that where you got your talents from?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should ask that, because my mother had an extraordinarily beautiful voice. A very unusual tone. Beautiful, beautiful. But my mother was shy. As a young girl, she sang on radio. because in my mother's day, that's what she did. But the truth of the matter is she was not really cut out to be in show business. This is a tough business, and you know, it's not for everyone. Although somebody may have talent, that doesn't mean that they're cut out to be in show business. And that's exactly who my mother was. She had a wonderful voice, but she wasn't cut out to be in show business. But I think, to answer your question, yes, it may very well be genetic, you know, because a lot of my friends who are children of very famous people are extremely gifted as their parents were. So either it's you're surrounded in the environment or there is an element of genetics. I think it's maybe a little bit of both. In my case, it has to be genetics because nobody in my family was in show business.
So in growing up, did you wind up like hanging with, I guess what they would call child prodigies and, you know, like people that like...
It's an interesting question because I really didn't. I lived in Brooklyn. All my friends were my friends in Brooklyn, the kids I grew up with. And I really didn't mingle with the child prodigy circuit, as you might want to call it, until I was in high school. And I wound up going to school in Manhattan for the first time. Here I was going to Brooklyn, going to school in Brooklyn all these years and, you know, schlepping on the subway into New York City to do rehearsals for Merv Griffin. And yet I was schlepping in on subway. I was a kid from Brooklyn. I was training during the day in Manhattan. But I was going back home to Brooklyn. When I was in high school, by the time I got to high school, which was years later, because I started at 12, I started so young, so it wasn't until years later, until I was in high school, was I really aware of the sort of child prodigy scene. Because then I started to go to school with other kids. I went to private school, I went to Lincoln Square Academy, who were also in show business or their parents were very famous. I went to school with Ben Stiller and Amy Stiller. Their parents were Stiller and Mira. So, you know, they were children of famous people. But and I also went to school, you know, with kids that were in Broadway shows. And Irene Cara, who is a wonderful, well, she's just an amazing artist. Irene was in school with me, too. Stephanie Mills was in school with me. You know, a lot of kids were in school with me. But there were a lot of famous actors that went to my school as well. So I wasn't really, really, really aware of a lot of kids who were artists until I was actually in high school. And I'm kind of glad that it was like that because I wasn't one of these affected sort of showbiz. I wasn't slick, you know what I mean? And I think that might have been some of the appeal that people were sort of attracted to when I was a young kid. I wasn't slick. I was a very plain kid who happened to sing extraordinarily well. And I think there was appeal in that. Does that make any sense to you? You know what I mean? I wasn't a showbiz kid. And
I could relate to some of it, but not all of it.
Were you in the background business as a kid?
I have a background in showbiz as a comedian and singer.
Oh, so you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, but I didn't. I got to like. I can't deal with this. You know, it's kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's like what I said before. Yeah. It's not for everyone. Talent is not enough. You know, you really have to have the temperament to be able to live in this business. This is a very hard business. I mean, people are criticizing you every day. You know, you lose a lot of your childhood if you're young because you're off training all the time. You're under a tremendous amount of pressure. I was balancing school and rehearsals and always exhausted, going back and forth into Manhattan and back into Brooklyn and the hours. And you know, and you're treated like an adult. You're expected to rise and shine to the occasion. So
sure.
I could totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and, but there's also, it was also like if, when you're out there, if you do clubs, the clubs always do the same thing. It's like, where can we see you? Or we'll let you do 10 minutes.
Well, what you're saying
for
is
free,
very true.
You know?
You're always in the audition stage
when
you're trying
to get
work.
No matter what.
My advantage was I started on TV.
Yeah.
So TV was my calling card. So by the time I was old enough to play the live venues, they already knew who I was.
Yeah.
So I was extremely fortunate. I was extremely fortunate. And I have heard this before from other artists, and you are absolutely positively correct that, you know, when an artist is trying to get out there and work live, that it takes them years to build a reputation as a live performer because they're starting from the bottom. People have to get to know who they are. In my case, I was extraordinarily fortunate because I was too young to play live venues when I was 12 years old, when I was starting out.
Sure, yeah.
So the next place they put me was television, which was my advantage because by the time I was old enough to play the live venues, everybody knew who I was.
Oh.
So it was a very different experience, which came with its pressures as well, because I was totally green. I didn't know what I was doing, and I was learning on my feet, but yet I was at these prestigious number one venues where I was expected to know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. You could do things when you're young that you can't do now. If I was faced with that now, I don't know. I don't know if I would want to go through it. It's an enormous amount of pressure. But you know, youth is a blessing because so much rolls off of your back when you're young that doesn't roll off your back when you're older.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
it was fun. I had a good time. I still have somebody on my Facebook. He keeps saying, and I don't even I don't remember him. That's the problem. But he keeps saying to me that he remembers seeing me at some place, and he keeps asking me when am I going to go back into show business and do another show. And I'm trying to explain. I stopped that years ago.
Well, yeah.
It's not for
everyone.
Yeah.
It's not. There are people that are friends of mine that are enormously gifted.
Yeah.
More gifted than a lot of celebrities that are out there. But they don't want to live the life of show business. It takes a lot out of a person.
Yeah,
it's a very hard life, and you have to really want this. And if you don't really, really want it, you're not going to be able to live in it. You're just not. It's a very difficult existence, and you really have to be made for it. You have to be built for this life. I'm very clearly built for it, but my mother wasn't. And my mother was actually, I think, a finer singer than I am, but my mother wasn't built for it. Her temperament, her ability to get on with people criticizing you every day, her ability to be in a different city all the time. You know, my mother wasn't that kind of person. I am. I could live with that. But there are so many people that are attracted to the arts that don't make it full-time. They have other jobs, and they work on the weekends so that they have both worlds.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that do that, and they're enormously gifted, and that's the way they live, and it works for them. But if you're going to do this full-time, you better be the kind of person who could live this life, because it's not an easy life.
No, not at all. Let me ask
you
something in regards to Frank Sinatra.
Sure.
Were you ever, like, did you meet, I guess, the Rat Pack? Or is that...
Well, there were... I met a lot of Mr. Sinatra's friends. As a matter of fact, every night backstage was another party for Mr. Sinatra's friends. I need to mention that I have a new CD out called Julie Budd.
Yes, we want to get into that.
Remembering, yeah. Julie Budd Remembering Mr. Sinatra. And as I mentioned before, it's a tribute and Valentine to all of those wonderful songs that we sang in concert during those years that I was, during the time that I was fortunate to work with Mr. Sinatra at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas when I was just 16 years old. And the CD is coming out on September 1st, and it'll be available on Amazon and iTunes and CD Baby and Barnes & Noble and any of the stores that still exist. There are so few of them, you know. There are so few of them. And to answer your question, I knew Joey Bishop. He was a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Joey. I didn't know Peter Lawford. And Dean Martin was someone, you know, it's interesting. I worked with so many people in the industry, but he was one of the people I never did work with. I was aware he had a very famous TV show. But I happened to be very good friends with his daughter, who's extraordinarily gifted, Dina Martin. So it's funny how things work.
Yeah,
Dina's a charming, charming and talented gal, and I'm very friendly with Dina. She's just terrific. But no, it skipped a generation. The Martin family skipped a generation with me. But I was Mr. Sinatra's little protege.
Oh, which is great, of course.
Well, he was just great to me. You know, it's interesting. I had heard so many different stories about Mr. Sinatra prior to my meeting him. It was just a very, very interesting thing. How legend, you know, plays a part in how the world sees you. Was some of it true? Was some of it not true? I can tell you this. He was wonderful to me. And that was my experience.
Yeah, that's what counts.
And that's what counts.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. That is what counts.
So you're going to be at the Metropolitan Room?
I'm going to be at the Metropolitan Room on September 10th. My CD comes out September 1st, which, my goodness, is just days from now.
Yes.
I know. It's just going to be a very exciting September for me because September 1st, my CD, Julie Budd Remembering Mr. Sinatra, is released. September 10th, I'm at the Metropolitan Room here in New York City on West 22nd Street at 7 p.m., and I bring my concert, Julie Budd Remembering Mr. Sinatra, and I'm their resident artist over there. I'm their resident celebrity artist. So I was there in May. Now I'll be there in September. I'll also be there in October, and I'll be there in December. So that's kind of my home when I'm here in New York City. And then I'll be at Barnes & Noble. I'll be at Barnes & Noble on East 86th Street on September 28th, and I'll be signing my new CD, and I'll be interviewed by Tom Santopietro. He's going to be interviewing me because he wrote a book called Sinatra in Hollywood. And so, therefore, he'll be interviewing me at Barnes & Noble. And I'm also bringing my entire band into the store. So we're going to do some selections. Yeah, no, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a great time. And people can connect with me on Facebook or on my website, juliebudd.com. And that's Julie Budd with two Ds, J-U-L-I-E-B-U-D-D. And they can connect with me on my website, and it'll have all of these dates. And you should, if you're in the New York area, you should really come because this is our way of celebrating Mr. Sinatra's birthday. Can you believe this year he'll be 100 years old? 100 years old.
I know
it.
Yeah, and then you turn and you go, "Have I aged? Am I that old?"
Well, it's not that we're old. God bless Mr. Sinatra.
Yeah.
He would have been 100 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still relatively a young person.
Yeah.
But I could look back and smile and say I was a part of history. And that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Did you tend to sing when you did your shows? Did you tend to sing many of his songs that,
it's difficult not to because Mr. Sinatra, you know, hailed from the American Songbook. So if you were singing, you know, so if you're singing standards of any kind, you could be sure that either he covered it or Ella Fitzgerald covered it or Judy Garland covered it or
You're
Lena
right.
Horne. You know, and I was sort of raised, you know, I was raised with that music. All of my friends, it's funny, they were listening to rock and roll and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and the Dave Clark Five and The Who, and
yeah.
I was listening to Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald. It was just where my aesthetic resonated as a young kid, which was unusual. That was another thing that was sort of unusual about me when I started out. I was this young girl with very, very sophisticated ears, and so therefore it was kind of an interesting thing to see from a child. And yet I wasn't pretentious about it. It was just where my likes and dislikes resided. I loved the American Songbook at a very, very young age. And I owe that to my mom, because my mom, being a great singer, taught me all of those songs when I was a little girl. It's actually a very, very sweet memory, because that time that I had with my mother as a young child was always centered around music and wonderful books and music. My mother was just, she was a true artist. My mother could also paint. My mother could cook. My mother was a great singer. She was she was loaded with art. My mother had a great eye for what was beautiful. My mother could go into the dingiest little store and pick out the most beautiful object, you know. So she was an artist through and through. So as per your remark about genetics, you know, I was raised around art through my mother.
That's great to have that, you know, your parents as a background of that.
And
or...
so therefore I was a pretty sophisticated little 12-year-old. And I was carrying the torch for the American Songbook even at 12 years old. And so therefore Mr. Sinatra was such a natural fit.
Oh yeah,
because it was the older generation and the younger generation speaking the same language at a time when that was not happening.
Yep, that's I always listen to songs like that because that's what my parents were listening to.
And it was great because you and I were raised around quality art. And that really does change you. It does change you.
What I also wanted to ask you, were there any songs like written for you to sing, or somebody said, oh, this would be great for Julie Budd to sing?
Yes. When I was a little girl and my parents took us to the Catskill Mountains for the summer, and I didn't want to go to sleepaway camp anymore. I was not one of the campers. My sisters, God bless them, great campers. Camper of the week, camper of the day, camper of the minute. I couldn't wait to get out of there. My parents took me to a place called Tamarack Lodge up in the Catskill Mountains.
Oh, I heard that.
And,
yeah.
Right, right. And there was a talent show. I was only 11 and a half years old, 12 years old. And I sang in the talent show. I won the show. And in the audience was a very, very famous, who still is very famous, gentleman. His name is Herb Bernstein. And Herb at the time was recording Laura Nero. In fact, those first hits that Laura Nero had, Herb was responsible for producing those. And he recorded John Denver, Tina Turner, and all these people, the Four Seasons, a group called The Happenings. He had all those hits with The Happenings. And he heard me sing. And he asked my parents if he could take me to do a demonstration record, and he played it for Ed Sullivan and Merv Griffin. And I wound up doing all those shows because Herb Bernstein wound up getting involved in my career. Well, Herb Bernstein is also my conductor and orchestrator even today. We stayed together all these years. We stayed together. And to answer your question about original material, because Herb had all these hit records and was a very, very proficient writer and orchestrator. Over the years, I've recorded a good many of his pieces. And they've been on my CDs. And yes, to answer your question, the answer is yes, of course. I've I've done a lot of wonderful original pieces, and I mix them in with the CDs that I've done with the standard pieces as well.
That's. I also understand you did. There was something involved with a movie.
Oh, I've done several films. I did one. I had a wonderful relationship with the Walt Disney Company. The most wonderful people to work for. And I did a film for them called The Devil and Max Devlin with Elliot Gould and Bill Cosby and Susan Ann Spock. And a little boy who you'll remember, his name was Adam Rich. Remember the show Eight is Enough?
Yeah.
And Betty Buckley, I think Betty Buckley played the mom on Eight is Enough.
Uh-huh.
Remembering correctly, well, he was one of the lead characters on that show, and I got the lead in the film. Also in the film, they required me to sing, because I was playing a singer in the film, and who do I meet? I meet Marvin Hamlisch, and that started our lifelong friendship until, God bless him, the time he passed. Would you believe it's going to be 3 years since we've lost Marvin?
Really?
Yeah, sure. And I did a film with Marvin. I did their playing a song, which was Marvin Hamlisch's show. I did recordings of that Marvin wrote for me, wonderful song called Roses and Rainbows that he actually penned for me for The Devil and Max Devlin at the Walt Disney Studios. And then I did another film with Joaquin Phoenix and Gwyneth Paltrow, called Two Lovers. I had a very small role in that film, but I had a wonderful time doing it. And then I wound up working with Marvin Hamlisch because of our friendship that started at Disney. And I wound up working with Marvin for 7 years. We toured all over the country, the Kennedy Center and symphonies all over the country. And I was his guest artist for about 7 years at symphony orchestras all over the country. And then, unfortunately, you know, we lost Marvin.
Mm.
And that's it's a sweet memory.
Yeah, that's Queens College's...
Marvin went to Queens College for a while.
Yeah, I met him there because they opened something. Something opened up regarding him. I think...
Well, probably they dedicated a wing in the music department, didn't they?
Yes. The Lefrak...
The Lefrak family dedicated,
and yeah,
I think it's a wing.
A music center there, and I think that he was there, for the opening, and of course I had to cover the event.
wonderful artist.
Yeah.
He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. And, you know, it's funny, Marvin and I sort of got it with each other, because he was a showbiz kid too, you know, but he was from a very similar background to mine. He was just a regular kid who happened to be a prodigy, and, We shared a lot of the same sort of background. So, you know, we were sort of kindred spirits. I'm still very friendly with his wife, Terry Blair. I know she misses him enormously. It's been very hard for her, and I could surely understand how that would be, because he was an extraordinary spirit, you know?
Mm.
His energy. He was an extraordinary human being, with a lot of gifts, and and I'll go as far as saying that I really do believe that we lost our generation's Gershwin when we lost Marvin Hamlisch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really do miss him. He was a great guy. He was a terrific guy.
So what, aside from the CD, do you have any other plans coming up that... what you're thinking about the next CD or anything?
Well, you know, I'm so in love with this project, and I can't wait for people to share it. I'm just so excited about sharing it with the audience on September 1st. And my mind is really on that CD right now. Of course, there are other recording projects that are sort of on the fire right now, but I'm really focused on this. And going around the country and doing my concerts. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be at the Smith Center in Las Vegas, and I'm going to be performing Mr. Sinatra remembering Mr. Sinatra there, because I thought how great to do it in Las Vegas, where I actually met Mr. So in the spring, I'll be bringing the concert to the Smith Center, and I'll be at Ramapo College in December on the 12th, the day of Mr. Sinatra's birthday. I'll be doing this show at the Berry Center at Ramapo College right on Mr. Sinatra's birthday.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, I'm going to bring it to the Metropolitan Room September 10th. And,
yeah,
and I'll be doing it all over the country, and I'll be at Barnes & Noble on September 28th. So I'm going to be all over the place.
Okay. Well, I'll be sure.
I expect you to
be
there. I expect you to be there.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to come. You know, as what I was thinking back to why I remembered your name is also because I was always watching things like Merv Griffin show. I watched all those shows all the time.
And so, you know, we all grew up together. We all,
yeah,
you know, those shows, we don't have anything like that today.
No, I know.
And I sure wish we did. Don't you? I sure wish we had. Don't you miss those shows?
Yes, I do. But I don't watch any of those late
shows
anymore.
No, but I bet you all our listeners miss them as well.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Because it was a wonderful time. It was really a great time.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll have more great times. At least we can listen to you and go and see your show. And I'll certainly do everything I can to promote it as well.
Well, you're so sweet. You really are. You're such a sweetheart to have me on today. And you're so gracious to support the arts the way you do. I really appreciate you. Really, I do.
Yeah, I have to. Well, the arts have to stay around. They just do.
Well, they change the world. If there's one thing that does change the world, it's art. And it elevates people and brings them together, no matter what their backgrounds are, no matter who they are. And it gives opportunity to kids that ordinarily would not see opportunity. So it's one of the most important things in the world.
Yeah. Well, I'm very happy to have had you on the show.
Thank you so much.
You know, we could do an aftermath of after you present this, and to add.
Oh, I would love that.
Please
get involved. Yeah, talk to Richard Skipper. You know, he's an extraordinary artist himself, Richard Skipper, a tremendous actor and performance artist, and probably one of the greatest press agents I've ever worked with in my career. So if anybody makes things happen, it's Richard Skipper. So do get a call into him to do that, because I'll look forward to it.
I have a feeling he might be listening right now.
Well, then his ears should be burning.
Yeah.
He's terrific, and I adore him. I adore him. And I know you do, too. So,
yes. Do
call Richard. Do call Richard
so
we can freeze our little relationship.
Okay, and schmooze.
And schmooze. One girl from the Bronx and one girl from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Okay.
Please do. I'll look forward to that. And again, thank you so much for having me on.
You're quite welcome. And have an absolutely wonderful day.
Thank you, sweetheart. I hope I see you at the show.
By the way, where are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Manhattan, and I'm laying in my bed.
Okay.
I've got my cup of tea next to me, and I'm chatting with my new girlfriend.
Okay.
Take care, and thank
you
again
take
so
care.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Be well. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Oh, yeah, that was Julie Budd, and that's absolutely fabulous. We got to see her at the Metropolitan Room here, and don't forget about her CD. So I'm going to leave everybody. And where's my music? Oh, I got this thing here. If you're not listening now and listening to this another time, have a great day, evening, or whatever.